If you've been following, to the best of our knowledge, the last few months, you know we're collaborating with Sipur Israeli, or Israel Story, the This American Life of Israel. It's one of the most popular radio shows in that country. In today's episode, Shai Satran brings us the story of an Israeli composer who lost her music after a traumatic brain injury and through hard work, got it back.
Hello, Shai.
Hi, Noah.
I met Noah Guy, an Israeli composer, in her Manhattan apartment.
Well, when people ask me how did you end up in New York, I always say by accident.
We'll get back to how and why Noah ended up in New York. But her story starts in her hometown, Jerusalem.
I was born in Jerusalem and grew up there. And from very, very early age was attracted to music and studied music.
The fact that Noah was so drawn to music was kind of surprising.
It's hard to say how Noah became so much into it.
This is Avner, Noah's brother.
Our parents did not expose us to classical music.
Our father was injured in the Independence War and had always had headaches, so the house has to be quiet.
And a loud noise would disturb him a lot. And many times he would leave home just when Noah was playing, which was not very much encouraging. And in spite of that, she was very stubborn and continued to practice, to learn more.
So music was, in a way, sort of a noise. But nevertheless, I continued, and that was my passion. After high school, no question what I'm going to do. I went to the Jerusalem Music Academy, finished the theory department, and then studied composition privately, and then moved to Berlin to study music there.
After winning many international prizes, Noah moved back to Israel and was appointed to be the manager of the Jerusalem Music Academy, which, as you can imagine, is quite a big deal. And all in all, her career was booming.
And on 93, I came to work with Isaac Stern for a week.
Noah's week in New York was supposed to culminate with a concert at Carnegie Hall, a high point of any composer's career. The first few days of the week leading up to that concert were set aside for final rehearsals.
On that day, which was a Thursday, we went to his country house in Connecticut to work there in, you know, a different environment and quiet environment. I don't remember really much since. It was a country road, it was in the fall, trees were burning colors, beautiful colors. Everything was a little like a dream in a way. I do remember the last thing that I told Isaac, that I think that he's driving very, very fast, and he looked at me, you know, side look, and he used to call me Bubele. So I said, Bubele, don't worry, I'm a very good driver. That's the last thing I remember.
And on the way, he hit a tree and created a very severe injury to my sister. She just got out of the car, pulled him out, and then collapsed. She was evacuated to a New York hospital over there and was in a coma for quite a few days. And that came in a time that she was really getting into the peak of her career.
She woke up 8 days later.
The first thing that I remember is that I was violated, that something really awful happened. I didn't know where I was, I didn't know where I was alive or where I was dead. I was just seeing these half-white creatures hovering over me, touching me as if, you know, without asking permission. And it was an awful way to wake up. I couldn't make sense of anything. It's really tempting to give up at a situation like that. But it was a decision not to. I'm going to make it.
But she made two decisions. One, to stay in life. Second one was that she'll be okay and she'll be able to function as a normal person.
That second decision, to lead a normal life, would require tremendous efforts and many years.
I was paralyzed on the whole right side of the body. You know, I had shoulder injury, hip injury, all kinds of injuries, but the main thing was the brain injury.
She was then with one of the physicians. They just put a pencil in front of her and asked her, what is that? And she could not say the word. She could not identify. And then I burst in tears, and it was the first time for her to see me really crying.
It's not easy to explain, because after I got a little better and I was able to communicate and I began to live again, people didn't realize what really was going on, that for me to hear a sentence and remember the whole sentence and formulate an answer was an enormous task. And that's why I call this transparent injury, because from the outside I looked fine. I was talking, I was nice, I was smiling, I was polite. And inside it was this struggle to go on, not to let the injury shut me down, and because it was so taxing.
When we talk to each other now and there's some background noise, we can ignore this noise. But she cannot. She has to process it through her mind and decide what she had constructed. And that takes a lot of energy and very tiring.
What Avner just described is a malfunction of sorts of Noah's attention modification system. It can be explained through a famous psychological finding, the cocktail party effect. Imagine you're chatting with someone at a cocktail party. There are many different background noises. Loud music is playing, the sounds of silverware, plates, glasses clinking, not to mention all the other conversations taking place all around. But somehow, we sort of lower the volume on all those background sounds and raise it on our friend's voice. We don't have to think about it. We're not even conscious of it. It just happens. Basically, our brain is constantly filtering out a huge amount of stimuli that simply isn't that important to us. Without these filters, our brain would overload.
What does it feel like to sit in a noisy restaurant and just have a conversation with a friend?
About half an hour after it begins, I have to leave, because it's just bombarding me in a way that I'm so overwhelmed that at a certain point it's too much. You know, when you talk to me, you listen to me and you're not listening to the environment. And for me, all the sounds are at the same level. It's almost impossible to explain. It's as if I'm on a stage and there's floodlights all the time. There is nothing more important than the others. I can't filter out things because I lost the filters that we usually have of discerning what's important and what not. It's exhausting.
This condition of not being able to perceive or focus on more than a single object at a time has a name: simultagnosia. It's pretty rare, and most of the people who suffer from it, like Noah, experienced some sort of traumatic brain injury. But Noah's case is particularly interesting to researchers because her entire musical perception changed after the accident.
The first piece I wanted to listen to was Beethoven's String Quartet. And the first time I listened to it, I was blown away because I didn't hear a string quartet. I just heard four laser beams of sounds. They were very clear and totally disconnected. I couldn't make sense of it. I couldn't put it together. And I heard the violin, cello, viola, and I didn't know what it was. It was like four parallel independent lines that wouldn't connect. They were totally independent. It was like a piece of puzzle, you know, just scattered on the table. And you know that if you put them in the right pattern, they fit. I couldn't do that. I heard it, I don't know how many times, I heard it again and again in the hope that I will be able to put them together. Couldn't put it together.
Oliver Sacks, the famous neurologist, dedicated a chapter to Noah in his 2007 book, Musicophilia, Tales of Music and the Brain. Sacks gave Noah's condition a name, disharmonia, the inability to integrate auditory components into a single harmony. Noah, of course, had devoted her life to music, and this was the worst injury she could imagine.
In a way, I think that if I would have lost a leg, it would have been easier for me. But the fact that I lost a major part of my identity, of my inner identity, and that I could not recreate it, is cruel and painful still today. at a certain point, you know, listening to it again and again, it became like a torture.
Despite her disharmonia, Na discovered that with substantial efforts, she could still appreciate and even create music. For example, when Na reads sheet music, she can, in a sense, still imagine the music, at least in her mind, even though she can't hear the music. It's confusing. Her road to recovery was long and full of hurdles.
Today I can put things together, but it's work. I have to do it consciously. It's not that I put a piece of music and I hear the music. No, now I'm hearing the string quartet, so listen to them together. And I learned how to do that, but it's still a conscious process. It used to be like language. I wrote string quartets. I mean, it wasn't even a question. It was a pleasure, and it was my refuge.
Na had to relearn even the most basic skills.
I bought a piano, and I couldn't play. And it was a shock. After trying and realizing that I'm not going to be able to do it alone, I swallowed my pride and started taking piano lessons. I had to learn the ear-eye-hand coordination. It was a sort of a gift because I realized how complicated piano playing is, but it was also very frustrating because I lost my ability to play. I lost this connection to music that I had, that I could sit and write music like you write a letter. And it was so easy and everything was so enjoyable and so fluent. And I think that's the major thing, that if you ask me if something didn't heal, this didn't heal. Everything else is fine.
Na was stubborn. She learned to play the piano again and eventually even went back to composing. In 2006, 13 years after that concert that should have been, Na finally got her New York City debut.
I made 3 big pieces, hour long each. Actually, it's a musical diary of my recovery. So the first piece is from darkness to waking up. Just broken pieces that are somehow put together and in the end are making some sort of sense. And a friend of mine came afterwards and she said, I know you for so many years. It's the first time that I begin to understand what you're going through.
At the beginning of the piece, you remember, Na explained that she ended up in New York by accident, quite literally. What she didn't say is that she hasn't been back to Israel since that accident, over 20 years ago.
Since then, she cannot travel because all of her balance organs were destroyed, so she's stuck for life in New York City, which is not bad. There are worse places to be stuck at.
For a very long time, I thought that, well, another 6 months of therapy and I'll be back home. I always wanted to go home.
She didn't make it back home. She didn't see my father because he was sick and couldn't travel, and she couldn't travel, and he passed away quite a few years ago. She could not be at her daughter's wedding and things like that.
And it took many years of therapy and forgiving and accepting to realize, okay, I can't go back. Israel is still, you know, I'm Israeli, but it's not painful anymore. But it used to be a real longing to come home. It took a lot of work to realize that a new beginning is the right approach and not hanging on to the past, which is not available. I'm in a place that I don't think that I would have been here in this form, being able to look at things and see things and see the world in a way that I do, and in a topsy-turvy way, I'm grateful for it.
Our story comes from Shai Satram with Israel Story. You can listen to more Israel Story pieces on our website at ttbook.org. And if you like them, tune in to Israel Story's first season in English on the Vox Tablet podcast.